This will be the beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 111, Program C, page 402. But I want to go back just a little bit to what we've just discovered. The word demonstrate is so important in Scorpio and also in Taurus, which has to do with the materialization of the realization. That which is envisioned and understood can be materialized in Taurus as well. And remember that the fourth level of the personality is the dense physical level. You have the lower mind, astral, etheric, and then the plane of materialization with which both Taurus and Scorpio can be associated. Taurus, because it has so much third ray because of its connection with Venus, and Scorpio illustrating somehow through its M, a triple nature, which must include the very lowest of the planes when the three are considered as the three of personality. So what do we do here? There is the, on the a clockwise wheel, desire is growing stronger and stronger. I want more of that which the wheel of rebirth offers. But on the reversed wheel around the zodiac, there is, you know, and one struggles, of course, to fulfill one's desires, and where thereby one builds up one's strength and faculties and knowledge, because a struggle will generally lead to an acquisition of some kind, or at least to an experience which will tell how acquisition can be made. But on the reverse progress around the zodiac, the struggle is to overcome and destroy all that has been so laboriously achieved or gathered. You know, it is an accumulative sign, and even Scorpio is an accumulative sign. The tendency to corner the market, as DK has said, of the unredeemed Scorpions, who probably have a lot of third ray, the accumulative tendency of the third ray. The struggle is to overcome and destroy all that has been so laboriously achieved upon the ordinary wheel, and to demonstrate in Scorpio through the terrific tests there applied, 9 tests, 3 levels of tests, that the form no longer controls. And in other words, what are we saying here? We're saying demonstrate that the moon, which is form, false, no longer controls. And its exaltation, in the lower sense, is put down. So the moon falls, and its material significance falls, but in a way its exalted significance as raising matter in a higher vibration up to susceptibility to heaven, that is retained. So we have to continually look at things from both sides simultaneously. Master DK is in many ways a Geminian teacher, and he will have us not fix our minds upon one set condition, but always reveal that the reverse position has much to demonstrate to us, much to show us, much to reveal. That form no longer controls, but that the lessons learnt through the use of form, because we have the utilitarian nature of Taurus, right, have been retained. That all that has been gathered is used, found and used. We're talking about the second ray law of pulse here. Slowly the eye of wisdom must be opened, slowly the love of that which is the true, the beautiful and good must enter the dark passages of worldly thought. Slowly the torch of light, the fire of right, must burn the garnered treasures of the past, yet show their basic usefulness. So the utilitarian nature of Vulcan and of Taurus, of Vulcan and of Taurus, is revealed. And you can keep what you have. All those nuggets of knowledge of the world in the secondary law of repulse can be actually retained as long as one is not attached to them, and as long as the single eye is opened and they are seen in their true light rather than with the dualistic two eyes. So, these lessons in the use of form have been retained, and person knows how to use form. The individual who struggles to be free of form knows how to use form. And the struggle is to achieve. We struggle forward, you know, from the two horns to the one horn. The two horns of Taurus, the two horns of the goat, to the one horn of the unicorn, we struggle forward to achieve initiation in Capricorn and thus release the soul from the revolving wheel. Or at least the soul will be on the wheel that turns in all directions simultaneously, which is a liberated wheel, a liberative sphere. But at least from the revolving wheel turning clockwise, and to achieve final liberation from the thraldom of desire and from form control of any kind. That we are deluded, you know. If you think about it, we want what is empty and we reject what is full. The plenum, ever full of being and reality, unchanging being and reality, is forever present, but we want those vacuities or illusions which are born of form and which have no self-being, no self-existence. They are all derivative. We want the derivatives instead of that from which the derivative is derived. So, almost like financial talk here, let us stop wanting the derivatives. Okay, derivatives. I guess that's how it's spelled. Let us stop wanting the derivatives, the vacuities, the empty forms, which are in a sense empty of reality and yet can be none other than reality. At least their form deceives us into thinking they are real, but they are not. So the Buddha taught detachment from all derivatives, detachment from all vacuities. And he taught us to seek the ultimate void of vacuity, which is the ever full, which is the absolute plenum, which is the suchness, you know, the unchanging pure being. These are just words that, you know, we need the experience. We have to learn how to transform the evident vacuities into a realization of the real, the presence, the substanding one, the substance, the one, the reality. Okay, so however we decide to make that transformation happen, that is up to us. We have to learn how to do that, each in his own way. No one can tell you. The teacher can point the way, can indicate the way, but your way is your own. Your way is unique. You are a unique externalization of the one. And your way back is uniquely your own. It's almost like being given, you know, on these webinars, you're given a number which only you are supposed to use, and it will get you into the webinar. If you give it to someone else, it's going to cause confusion, the false fusing of things which must remain distinct. So let us somehow find our own way in. This is what we must do, and have the trust in our inner nature that we can do this, that it will supply the knowledge we need to do what is needed. And this is ultimately the Buddha's self-reliance. You know, you say, oh, I need this teacher and that teacher. And yes, of course, temporarily and in time and space and according to hierarchy, one needs the teacher. But from another respect, one will find that the teacher one needs is really oneself, and that all the other teachers are actually oneself as well. There is only oneself, and that oneself is the teacher. This will be discovered. And may the day be sooner rather than later. Although you kind of wonder, we've been involved in so many universes, you know, numberless, and you know, who else are we but the one who has been all universes. So this has been discovered infinitudinous times, if you can use such a phrase, a word, a term, rediscovered and rediscovered, while never needing to be discovered at all, because the consciousness of reality is ever and always present, and whose consciousness is it anyway? You know, so this self-division of the one, the illusory self-division of the one, the part which is divided needs the self-discovery. The part which is undivided retains the full beingness ever. Anyway, we're going to get a little bit into decanates here, and that may cause a pause. Let's see. This is curiously emphasized by the rulers of the decanates in this sign. This begins the point C. Both the astrologers Leo and Sophariel practically and to all intents and purposes agree in their assignment of planets to govern the triple aspects of this sign. Every sign has three aspects. This we have to remember, and they do give their distinct qualities. Every sign has three aspects which give distinct qualities, and these you can see in the types of human beings born in these sections of the sign. It's a, you know, it's a more exacting study. For every sign, three types of human beings will be born, but then really six types, because there's a day face of 5 degrees for every decanate and a night face. But really, you can go even further and add the Dwadashamsa of 2.5 degrees. So that is, there will be four of those for every decanate, right? And two of them for the night face, two of them for the day face. Then you go even further, and one day it will be possible that every single degree, every one of the 360 degrees will reveal its unique quality. It gets to be a very refined, Virgo, meticulous thing to detect that, and we're nowhere near really being able to detect that. The Sabian symbols give the possibility of detection, but not in any scientific way yet. So that will all, the minutiae will be revealed when it becomes a necessary minutia. So, you know, Alan Leo would give a Taurus-Taurus-Venus, Taurus-Virgo, Mercury, and Taurus-Capricorn would give Saturn. So that would be the Hindu way of doing it. They only vary exoterically on one point, for Sophariel gives the moon as governing the second decan, whilst Leo gives Venus as ruling the first decan. However, Venus and the moon are often used interchangeably, and both express or emanate the same basic energy of active intelligence in its higher and lower aspects. So this is why Venus is sometimes solar systemically related to the monastic permanent atom. Venus and Jupiter and Saturn are said to temporarily hold the three higher principles of our solar logos, and Venus is the one associated with intelligence, and Jupiter with love, and Saturn with will. So, I guess Sophariel, well, let's just see here for a moment. We'll get out the decanate sheet. I think that's the way to do it. Okay, here we have this decanate table in landscape view, and we see that this is the Sophariel decanates, the Mercury, Moon, and Saturn. We understand that Sophariel begins with the outer planets, or at least maybe he begins with Mars, but he moves downward in terms of periodicity towards the Moon. So it would be, as he moves it, Mars, Venus, Mercury, Moon, and then he goes back out to Saturn. So Mercury and Moon rule the first two decanates in Sophariel's method, and Saturn rules the third. For Alan Leo, He simply assigns the ordinary rulers to the subdivision of a particular decanate. The first decanate, first 10 degrees, is called Taurus Taurus, and the first and ordinary ruler is Venus. Then Taurus Virgo, and the ruler of Virgo in the ordinary sense is Mercury, and then, Taurus Virgo, and then Taurus Capricorn, the ordinary ruler of Capricorn is Saturn. It looks, however, like the Tibetan has a different idea. So let's see what his idea may be. That Alan Leo and Safari are very exoterically on one point. For Safari gives the moon as governing the second decanate, yes, whilst Leo gives Venus as ruling the first decan. However, Venus and the moon are often used interchangeably and both emanate the same basic energy, although apparently in different decanates, the energy of active intelligence in its lower, higher and lower aspects. Interesting how the moon is redeemed by Venus. As a matter of fact, all of our moon chain difficulties inherited here on our fourth chain are being redeemed by the higher triadal nature, in a sense, of Venus, or at least the power of Venus on the higher mental plane. Although, you know, from a certain perspective, we can see Venus connected with the spiritual triad in as much as it involves or represents one of the three super principles at this time with Jupiter and with Saturn. So basically, he's telling us that even though the planets are assigned to different decanates, that Safariel and Leo are essentially using the same planets to indicate the rulers of Taurus. We will have Saturn bringing in the third ray, Mercury bringing in the fourth ray, and the moon, Venus, having to do with intelligence, either higher intelligence or lower intelligence. Now, when it comes to Venus and the moon, DK elaborates, one expresses intelligent love, and that's Venus, and the other the intelligence of matter. And it's very obvious, but I think we should put it down. Venus, yes, and the intelligence of matter, the instinctual intelligence, which is the moon. Venus is divorced in a way from the lower form. Venus represents the higher self, whether in the soul nature or if we wish to somehow find its connection to the monastic permanent atom and to the spiritual triadic nature. One expresses intelligent love and the other the intelligence of matter. This dual emphasis is concerned with the dominance of the form nature at first, dominance of the form nature, I want to put in at first, in the Taurian subject, and his release through the Venusian son of mind. So what is the antidote to this exalted moon? It is Venus, the son of mind, the solar angel, the higher mental plane energies. Whether we decide to triadalize Venus under some circumstances or simply leave it ruling the higher mental plane in general, we are on the higher mental plane. The moon or Venus, Mercury and Saturn control the decanates, and our consideration of these planets in the other signs will have indicated to you their right interpretation. Well, you know, Saturn representing difficulty and Mercury represents conflict and the moon or Venus intelligence, both here and elsewhere. So how to lay these out is a question. Form life, intelligent activity, and intense struggle summarize the Taurian problem whilst Mercury, the messenger of the gods, reminds the struggling man that he must become what he essentially is, thus escaping from illusion and entering into the light, as he does at the third initiation, or when a Scorpio has done its work. Now, the question is, how does decay assign these decanates? Form life, intelligent activity, and intense struggle summarize the Taurian problem. Now, which way are we moving? Let us take a look at what some of the other decanate theorists have said about this, particularly Nicholas Nilén and Stephen Pugh. Let us see how they have approached this. And here I think we will see that there is a difference. They've constructed their wheels in different ways. Now, for Nicholas, the outer wheel is the wheel of consciousness, and he has the Venus moon ruling the first decanate, Mercury the second, and Saturn the third. And then he simply, well, he doesn't exactly reverse them. Saturn is also the way by which the ordinary man enters, and that is the third decanate by which the ordinary man enters. And then he uses the sephariel method, meaning that the ordinary man would enter with Saturn, and the moon Venus would take up the second decanate and Mercury the first. But the way that would be true. Sephariel suggests that Mercury is the first decanate. Let's go to that so we can see that for sure. Sephariel suggests that Mercury is the first decanate, that the moon, and Nicholas adds Venus to that, is the second, and that Saturn is the third. Okay, but the ordinary man would enter via the third decanate, according to the Tibetans, so Saturn would be considered first. All right, that is his method. And when we look at, Stephen's method, yes, here it is. What Stephen has is Saturn as the first decanate on the wheel of consciousness, different from the moon Mercury. That Mercury will be the second and Venus the third. So this is a very different approach, and then he simply reverses these, that on the wheel of a form, which for him is the outer, Venus would be experienced first, then Mercury, and then Saturn. So we have different points of view being respected, presented here, and also we have to consider that the decanates in landscape view here assign, according to Nicholas, different constellations to the different decanates. Now, it's possible, there's two ways this can go. The river Aridinus, the river of souls by which man comes into incarnation. Auriga, the rapid charioteer, which I think fits quite well with Mercury. And Orion, the great huntsman with his brilliant stars. Now, this is one way to view it. Another way to view it, and I'm going to kind of give a little bit of a reverse view here in very small print. We will say that Orion might come here. Orion as ruling the first decanate, and I'll tell you why in just a minute, and Eridanus the third. These in Taurus, there seems to be some inconsistency when we seek to equate the extrazodiacal constellations and the planets which are said to rule. I'm going to make these alternatives quite small, put them in the 9-point rather than the 12-point, so we can consider the alternatives. I personally have not decided which it should be, but the Tibetan does give Moon Venus for the first, Mercury for the second, and Saturn for the third. Now, his words may have inclined Stephen Pugh to reverse this order. Form, life, intelligent activity, and intense struggle summarize the Taurian problem. Now, this is the question. Is DK talking about the non-reversed wheel here, or is he talking about the reversed wheel? If he's talking about the non-reversed wheel, then we can, as it were, begin backwards and say we should begin with Venus, Moon for the third decanate, intelligent activity always Mercury for the second decanate, and intense struggle for the first decanate on the unreversed wheel. Now, I think that's exactly what Stephen has done. Let me just check here. What he has done is on the non-reverse wheel, form life, intelligent activity, and great struggle. And then he has spoken of the reversal. He simply reversed the planets and said that Saturn must now rule the first decanate, Mercury the second, and Venus the third. So basically what he has done, in my interpretation at least, he has taken these words, and one can legitimately do that, and say, look, the average individual enters from the third decanate into and moves towards the first. Enters at 30 degrees, moves to 20, moves to 10, moves to 0. Form life is the Moon, though not particularly Venus, but let's just say the Moon. Intelligent activity would rule 20 to 10, and intense struggle would be the problem of the individual before he reverses the wheel. Maybe that's so. Whilst Mercury, the messenger of the gods, who is always found in the central decanate, can represent either intelligent activity or intuition, escaping from illusion via intuition, which Mercury also represents. So we could see that we could leave Mercury there in the second decanate, and he would enter into the light, which is Venus. I think there is justification for what Stephen has done here. Let me see, as I have worked on this, what I have done. I'm not sure. the sixfold chart. Yes, this is the question. Is the first decanate Venusian, or is the first decanate Saturnian? Now, obviously, it doesn't go along with the Alan Leo Hindu method at all, because Taurus sub Taurus is Venus. Taurus sub Virgo is Mercury. That's fine. But Taurus sub Capricorn is Saturn. But there does seem to be, and I think Stephen may have interpreted this properly, an entering into the light at the very end, and that is Venus. So if this is the case, I think we can take the method that I've laid out here, the first decanate being ruled by Saturn, the second by Mercury, of course, and the third by Venus. And the ordinary wheel would have Venus Moon here. And I think we cannot leave the Moon out. Include the Moon. Okay. And move towards Saturn, a great struggle in the third decan, and then reverse the wheel with Saturn coming first, Mercury next, and Venus, the final entering into the light in the third decanate on the reverse wheel. Obviously, I think in the Gemini chapter, DK talked about the difficulties in getting a real understanding of this fluid area of the decanates. And there are various opinions which can hold water. I see, when we look at what DK says here, he mentions form life first, then intelligent activity, and then an intense struggle. But usually intense struggles are not about liberation, and so they should not occur in the third or liberative decanate. The intense struggle may be continuing on the reverse wheel. Mercury giving the struggling man the intuition, and then the entering into light, which is the result of Venus. Now, generally, Mercury is a planet of higher expression than Venus, and it's older and more occult, but in this particular case, Venus can rule the end. Now, this would fit well with our sixfold, with our extra zodiacal constellations. In fact, what we would have here is Saturn, Mercury, and Venus Moon. These would be then the order on the wheel of consciousness. And I'm going to make them red, okay, just to point them out. And here I want to make the wheel of form would be Venus, Mercury, Saturn. But I think better the Moon, Mercury, the Moon for the third decanate, Mercury for the second, and Saturn for the third, which is the first. Okay, now what I've done here is I've amended this chart a little bit. You know, this has been an area that I've been thinking about a long time. Sometimes DK is not at all straightforward about what he says. You would normally think that the Taurian subject, Moon, Venus, Mercury, and Saturn, control the decanates. And then he tells us form life, which is the Moon, intelligent activity, which is Mercury, and intense struggle, which is Saturn. And of course, this more or less goes along with the Alan Leo assignment, Venus, Mercury, and Saturn. However, if you read very carefully, he seems to be giving us here both the clockwise wheel and the counterclockwise wheel. We begin with form life, which is certainly the beginning of the Taurian life, the growth of knowledge and intelligent activity, and then intense struggle to detach. And then that intense struggle continues on the counterclockwise wheel, and Mercury gives intuition instead of knowledge, and the entering into the light, Venus is the sign, is the planet of great light. So he seems to have given us both of the directions. Now, we would have to test out the appearance of people. I'm a great one when it comes to thinking that the inner forces mold the outer man according to their nature. So it may be, in a way, that the people born in the first decanate of Taurus do reveal the Venusian qualities, because it's a Taurus sub Taurus decanate. Those born in the second decanate, more the Mercurian qualities, and there's no question about that, because Mercury is the ruler no matter what. Those born in the third decanate, either way, going along the around the wheel in a reversed or a counterclockwise manner, in a clockwise or counterclockwise manner, may reveal the Capricornian Saturnian rulership. And so the order there, Venus, Mercury, Saturn, just like Alan Leo says, may have some effect. But DK is talking about a deeper psychological or spiritual method. And by the time we reach the third decanate of Taurus on the reverse wheel, we should not be struggling. We should be entering into the light. And so that's why I think that Stephen Pugh has caught the subtlety of this. And I think he may be correct. I cannot say it's exactly correct, but I think it is correct. Mercury means two different things, intelligent activity versus intuition. Form life is the moon, and everything starts there. But the lighted form is Venus. And, of course, the struggle that occurs in Saturn as you reverse the wheel, that makes a lot of sense. Now, let's see here whether we... we're not going to go on to the keynotes. We're simply going to work with the decanates before we go on to the keynotes. And this we will do looking at the landscape version here. Therefore, the extrazodiacal constellations could go in this direction, that Eridanus, the river of souls, the river bringing the souls in incarnation, could rule the first decanate. And Saturn has everything to do with concretizing consciousness and bringing it down into the lower three worlds ruled by Saturn. Mercury is the intelligent activity to progress within those lower three worlds and find liberation from them. And finally, Venus, because the charioteer is very fast, and that the charioteer, according to some traditions, has a kind of a Celtic meaning, at least there is a Celtic interpretation of it, of the very rapid charioteer, who was a woman in this case. I forget her name exactly, but Bernadette Brady deals with this myth, I think, in a convincing way. And Mercury represents the speed of the chariot. That fits quite well. Now, it has never seemed right to me that the brightest of all the constellations, having the seven first magnitude stars, Orion, this brilliant, large, bright constellation, so significant in our sky, and having everything to do with illumination, should be correlated with Saturn. Now, it is true that Orion was blinded and underwent certain tests of incapacity, but eventually he re-achieved his sight, and Venus has everything to do with illumination. So on the planetary level, Venus as the illuminator fits very well with Orion as the brilliant constellation. And I think that this is a legitimate way of interpreting. So then, when we enter from 30 to 20, it would be form life, the moon. When we acquire intelligence, as we live in the three lower worlds, it would be Mercury, as the god of the lower mind, although the god of many stages of mind. And then Saturn would give the intense focalization as an individual and the realization of limitation and the struggle to detach. And then we could begin the reversed wheel with the will of Saturn holding firm, not setting out a new course ruled by the will. Mercury, in this case, in other words, if we obey the law, obey the rules, and remain detached from form and separate from form and carrying out the will, we will be led to illumination via the intuition of Mercury, and then eventually we will enter into the full glory of the light in Venus. This is a way of understanding the planets and the extrazodiacal constellations, which gives, I think, a legitimate correlation between these extrazodiacal constellations, which Alice Bailey gives, and also the planets, which are given as the rulers. You can see it's a really tricky thing, and I'm sure that other theorists could justify going in a different direction if they wished. Now, let's look at the sixfold chart. So it turns out that when I created the sixfold chart, I actually did do it in this way. Somehow, for me, it was convincing that Saturn should rule the first decanate, but in terms of appearance, it might not. And I always want to say that the Hindu system always holds up in some respect, because every sign of the zodiac has three parts to it, relating to the three signs in the same element: Taurus, Taurus, Earth sign; Taurus, Virgo, Earth signs; Taurus, Capricorn, Earth signs. And if Taurus rules the first decanate, just generically, Venus will always be strong. If Virgo rules the second decanate, Mercury will always be strong. And if Capricorn rules the third decanate, then Saturn will always be strong in relation to this decanate. So I have reversed these, as have Stephen Pugh, for psychological reasons and because the Tibetan gave the description in a certain way. And this is the description I'm talking about: form life, that's the beginning, intelligent activity, and intense struggle summarizes the Taurian problem, you know, on the ordinary wheel. And now we're going to be in a detached state, and we're going to be disciplining the sexual energy under Saturn, because that's what Taurus does. And then Saturn again going to intuitive Mercury, the messenger of gods, escaping from illusion and entering into the light, which Venus represents fully, even though it is not as advanced a planet as Mercury is, nor as old. Now perhaps we can go to this sixfold chart and see how we might do this. Okay. Okay, I've done a little rearranging. You know, with decanates, it's a question of going in both ways, directions at the same time. The wheel does turn upon itself, and the issue of how to properly assign the decanates has to take into consideration the wheel turning upon itself and eventually in all directions simultaneously, which may spread across the sign all the planetary influences. When we look here at Saturn, what I've done here is to use different colors, and I think this may help just a little bit. There we go. The physical phase of the Taurian life is operating under Venus as the orthodox ruler, with some unconscious Vulcan influence, and the moon, in a way, as an exalted planet, can be, as DK says, used simultaneously with Venus. It's the lower effect of Venus. It is the higher intelligence immersed in form. It is that inner light, the spark of mind operating within the dense lower form. So in a sense, it's lunar, but its origin is from Venus. And this, the Tibetan tells us, is the light of Earth. Now, what I've done is I have left Saturn as the ruler of the first decanate, Mercury of the second, and the Moon as the third, remembering, however, that the individual, well, if you can call him an individual, the human being of the period enters from the third decanate to the second and to the first. So rather than speak so much about Venus in the first decanate, I'm talking about, or the third decanate, I'm talking about the Moon instead of Venus. And so what is said here is that under the sway of and indulging in the physical senses, that's the Moon, the physical form rules and we have lower incarnated life with all of the limitations of the effectively earthed soul. The higher consciousness has become extremely constricted and is buried in matter. Then we go to Mercury, still at a physical stage. You know, it's really the first petal of the egoic lotus. Material processes are preoccupying. The mind is asleep, although some knowledge may be, some ability to negotiate the physical environment is increasing. The chariot moves upon the planes of earth, the chariot of consciousness. The chariot is actually the physical body, but it's guided by a slowly awakening consciousness. This is really the Lemurian phase. I know I didn't do this for all of the signs. I wish I had, because it gives kind of an idea of the growth. Mostly I began with the stage of aspiration and went on to discipleship and then initiate status. But in some of these later signs, I have done both. The life is limited. It's subject to physical plane karma and blinded by the senses. Struggle with circumstance. Remember how he tells us that Saturn is always difficulty, and it always represents a struggle of some kind. And here we're on the strictly Lemurian type of experience. We're dealing strictly with that which the senses reveal. So we are under Venus as the orthodox ruler, but it's not the real Venus. What can I say? How shall I describe this? Not the real Venus, but a circumscribed Venus operating within the realm of the Moon or the lower senses. So that's what Venus, it represents the earthed mental consciousness stimulated by the solar angel. Okay. Right. The earthed consciousness, SC consciousness, stimulated by the solar angel. Okay, now when we move into the Atlantean phase, we still have the same decanate rulers, but they will be interpreted differently. We're the emotional life is ruling here under the Moon. Moon-Venus. Venus has something to do with the beginning of emotional life and with the second petal, because when I've looked at those outer petals, I've assigned them in this way, Capricorn, Taurus, Virgo. So Venus has much to do with the awakening of the second petal, and there's a little bit more hospitable atmosphere in which Venus can express itself, and some creative or artistic ability can be emerging. So there is sentiency, the emotional life, the attractive power of Venus desiring gratification, emotional indulging in wants, and the emotional life is ruling, and the Moon is still very powerful. Moon is still very powerful because the Moon represents emotional life particularly. Okay. So what we're looking at in this Atlantean phase, it's a lower type of Venus. The sacral center is very strong. It's an inverted Venus in a way. It's more the upside-down pentagram in a sense. It's the Orthodox ruler with some unconscious Vulcan for the resistance of matter and keeping the consciousness confined to Earth. We have selfish desire. We are attracting the things we like and appreciate. It's the light of Earth, and our desire extends only into the lower planes. So the moon is very powerful. Now the mind is learning to fulfill desire in this phase, the Mercury mind. The chariot moves upon the waters, the vehicle of the individual. The chariot is the emotional, physical nature now. It was before the physical body, particularly now the vehicle or the instrument is emotional, physical. And then we run into Saturn as the ruler of the first decanate. Remember, we're going in the clockwise manner. We're going, well, on the clockwise wheel, at least. We are moving towards the first decanate. A limited life, subject to emotionally induced karma and blinded by the feelings, struggle within the desire nature. Perhaps we are beginning to realize that all that we desire may not be good for us, and some things are withheld, and not all of our desires are fulfilled. We're being subjected to certain disciplines which do not allow the complete fulfilling of desire. Now remember, of course, I could reverse the moon and Saturn. Or the moon, Venus, and Saturn, and I could probably think of certain ways in which moon, Venus would relate to the first decanate and in which Saturn would relate to the third. Now we come to the mental or lower personal stage. Remember that Taurus is a sign eventually of considerable intelligence, so it's Venus is becoming more and more mental and less associated with the emotional plane. And Venus is the Orthodox ruler with some growing Vulcan influence, because as the mind gets stronger, the will gets stronger. So increasingly selfish desire is found here, and it is directed by the mind. This is the selfish mind. Increasingly selfish, I should almost say, mind. The selfish mind. Selfish mind fulfilling desire, because after all, Venus at this stage in Taurian development is desire. Now, if we go back here to the lunar part, the lunar Venus part, we're entering via the 30th degree, we're using the mind in this mental phase selfishly for the gratification of desire. And we're learning how to intelligently think about the world of the senses, how intelligently to think about the world of the senses in order to fulfill our desires. Because, as we know, we have not yet reached the stage of aspiration. We move in Taurus from desire to aspiration to intelligent activity of a higher kind, and finally towards illumination. Now, this is the moon decanate with some Venus, the way we're looking at it now. Then comes the Mercury decanate, moving backwards or moving in the direction towards the first decanate. The more intelligent mind becomes successful in fulfilling desire at the behest of the selfish personality, because we're beginning to get that lower personal integration here, which occurs on the plane of mind. The chariot is moving more rapidly. At first, it's quite, you know, often stuck in the mud, and is better directed, and the chariot is the threefold lower self now. I like that idea. And then we come into the limitations of Saturn again. Limited life, subject to mentally induced karma, and blinded by mental processes and thought forms. So we are struggling karmically with what the mind has inclined us towards. And now always in this first decanate, if ruled by Saturn, some limitations are placed upon the process, and these limitations have to do with the beginning of the detaching process. Okay, well, you can, you know, of course, read these yourself and, you know, decide how you want to treat them. We have not yet reversed the wheel. We are in the stage of struggle and discipline as we move towards Saturn in preparation for the reversal of the wheel. Karma always enters, and karma here under Saturn will deny the fullness of what we may desire, but this is all good in terms of the detaching process. So let us see. Let us, before moving on to number four, we will review that Eridanus, the river of souls, is connected with the first decanate and with Saturn, which brings about the concretizing of consciousness and its implantation in the lower worlds. Then Auriga, the charioteer, is beginning to move within these lower worlds in various ways with increasing intelligence. And finally, we make our way into the brilliance of Orion, which some have connected with the Christ consciousness, and being a great, let us say, second ray constellation within the body of our local one about whom naught may be said. And then if we look at this from the systemic point of view and from the neighboring planets of Earth, Venus is a very good symbol. So again, moving from Moon, Mercury to Saturn, and then from Saturn, Mercury to Venus. And I think that esoterically, this makes a lot of sense, even though, as I said, the very first decanate of Taurus will have some Venusian influence, and the last decanate will have some Saturnian influence, if each one of the decanates is ruled by one of the Earth signs. It just correlates, and I think when we examine the form and behavior of people, we will see this to be the case. Okay, I think we can get ready now. Why don't we, what I'll do here is I'll go to the original document, and I will set this up and say that we are, no, that's not it. Sorry for a little bit of the hassle here, but it's better to hassle than to have to stop the momentum, such as it is. The onward rush of the bull, maybe not of God in this case, but the onward rush. So end Esoteric Astrology 111C, and we're still on in the decanate tabulations and the clockwise wheel. And beginning Esoteric Astrology 111D in the decanate tabulations, counterclockwise wheel. Right. All right. So that's what we can do.